The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 319 of the Colombia Calling podcast. And we're here to give you and to bring you a coronavirus-themed episode with Peter Dale, who will be on in segment three. Peter is one of the original Bogota writers, and you'll be able to hear from his Quarantine Chronicles, originally entitled The COVID Diary, but it's the Quarantine Chronicles, and great reflections on life under quarantine in Bogota. And I think he'll help verbalize for some of you out there who have been unable to express perhaps how they are feeling. I think Peter's extracts will be able to help and perhaps, you know, lead us through this as we consider how our lives have changed on a day-to-day basis. But Peter's diary has been picked up by a producer, and it's called The Quarantine Chronicles, and you can find that on Instagram TV, so that's very exciting indeed. Of course, I'm going to leave this over to Adrian Alsimer of Columbia Reports, and he'll give you a news update. But before I get over to that, again, I cannot impress upon you all enough, and I know you're doing it, but let's keep on hammering the message away. Stay safe, self-isolate, distance, wash your hands, do everything that's asked of you, and we'll try and get through this all together. So that's me signing off for now. Segment two, Columbia Reports with the news, and then back in segment three with Peter Dale of the Bogota Writers reading extracts from his diary called The Quarantine Chronicles. It's a great episode, guys. Don't go away. And thank you always for listening.
My name is Adrian Alsimer, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for April 7, 2020. President Ivan Duque is considering a so-called intelligent lockdown in the face of the coronavirus pandemic. The high-risk strategy to lift the quarantine for low-risk age groups was initially coined in the UK. London dumped the experiment, however, after scientists claimed it could cost a quarter of a million lives. Colombia's president said he would decide on how to proceed when the current quarantine ends on April 13, after a meeting with scientists over the weekend. Until Sunday, the spread of the pandemic that killed more than 70,000 people worldwide was relatively under control in Colombia, according to the National Health Institute. While many countries saw the virus spread exponentially, in Colombia the virus has been virtually gradual. So far, this has prevented the collapse of the country's fragile healthcare system and has allowed the government to ramp up its treatment capacity. The coronavirus has brought much of Colombia's economy to a halt and has virtually destroyed its tourism industry. Small farmers have complained that they have been unable to sell their produce, but food supplies in urban areas have been relatively stable. The real scope of the economic damage caused by the pandemic and the lockdown are impossible to estimate. The pandemic may have reversed the mass migration of Venezuelans, according to multiple sources. Thousands of Venezuelans have been walking to their native country after the quarantine left many penniless and on the street. Until the pandemic triggered the quarantine that excluded Venezuelans from emergency aid, Colombia was estimated to receive thousands of refugees per day. Meanwhile, claims of ties between the government and drug traffickers continue to mount. The latest top official to be tied to Narcos is Vice President Marta Lucia Ramirez. According to Inside Crime, the vice president did business with Memo Fantasma, a drug trafficker who so far has been off the authorities' radar. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
This is the third segment of Colombia Calling, episode 319. We're here in Bogota, as you all know, under quarantine. This quarantine may run until, well, I think it may run until June, certainly as the mayor is talking about this and so on. It's how to keep sane during this period. I, for one, with the two children under one roof, and of course the dog, but the dog is a great respite because I can take him out for walks every now and then until it rains. But my guest this week is Peter Dale. He's a writer. He's one of the original writers in the Bogota Writers Group. It's been, you know, it's been around for some time now. They've published two books. The second book is Voices of Bogota, a great collection of anecdotal stories written by each member of the Bogota Writers, available to buy online and available to buy in bookstores here in Bogota, should we be allowed out at some point. And Peter and some of his companions, let's say, in the Bogota Writers, presented this book at the Hay Festival this January 2020. So that's very, highbrow stuff to get up there and be able to present. So the reason that Peter is on the show this week is that we're going to go, of course, coronavirus crazy this week, and we're going to talk about Peter's COVID diary. It's the first diary that I heard with that name, and now the name's become a little bit used. But Peter, as a writer, is writing a really interesting diary, and you can tell the ups and downs of each day as he sort of puts pen to paper or, of course, types up his diary. So let me welcome Peter Dale on this episode 319 of the Colombia Calling podcast.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me.
No, it's a great pleasure to have you. And I was so happy when you got in touch with me to say, listen, I'm doing this diary, I'm doing this thing. Maybe it's something that could be featured on the podcast. So, I mean, aside from your diary being something to keep you sane, now you've got a link up on, you know, you sent out on email suggesting or, inviting other people to follow the diary. Tell us a little bit about, well, of course, how it came about and what you hope to achieve with this diary.
Well, yeah, it's a kind of therapy. Looking back on it now, it's a kind of therapy. I didn't think, oh, I'm going to do this because it's going to be therapy for me. I just thought, this is something new. Looking back now, over 12 days, it seems, that we were so innocent in those days, 12 days ago. We had no idea what was going to happen. We still don't, but even more so then. So I just thought it was a good idea. The first day we were shut down, isolated. So I just wanted to put on paper what was going through my head. And I thought, this could be a diary. I didn't think it had to be every day. That I could share with two or three people, family, few friends. And I started sending it by mail, by WhatsApp to two or three people. And then I'd get really good feedback. Oh, this is really saying what I was thinking. I think someone else would like to see this. And it started to mushroom. So then I had to get more organized, mailing lists, sign-ups. So it's grown and it's exciting.
It is exciting. And I actually enjoy when each day's write-up hits my inbox, because I do read it. And of course we relate. I don't relate to everything because I'm not completely stuck in the house. But let's ask a few personal questions. How's your married life coping? Both of you do you have a big enough home that you can avoid one another?
Yeah, I think that's a good question for everyone who's going through this. I think you've got to be very positive. Everything's kind of concertinaed into time and space. Mm-hmm. That's what we're all feeling now. And I think you've got to have a positive outlook on things. I mean, we've had a couple of hiccups. I think everyone's going to have those. But you just got to be positive. You've got to say, look, we're in this together. Mm. In this case, two of us. So you've got to be keep each of us has got to keep the other one going.
And I think, you know, everyone always talks about the routine. And I read a piece, I don't know where, probably New York Times or somewhere, saying that, you know, astronauts in isolation have a very practiced routine. You know, for me, it's I get up early, the same time that I got up BC before coronavirus. And, you know, my son, then I get him up and breakfast and so on. Then it's the homeschooling and walking the dog after that. And then 10:30, the dog gets another walk. And then it's preparing lunch. And then mid-afternoon, you know, there's a routine now. I mean, my days are full. So it's been very bizarre. But, I mean, you know, I suppose you're reading, you're chatting. In one of your entries, you say, you know, the 6 p.m., you're not going to ask Constanza, your wife, how was your day? Which I found very prescient. I like that a great deal. I am certain none of us should ask our better halves that at all. So, but as you say, you know, you're keeping sane. But why would you feel? And we're going to listen to a few of your entries, and maybe you can tell us now a little bit about each one. But why do you feel that your diary is appealing to people? Because it is mushrooming. I mean, people know about it. It's going out to a mailing list. Is what out there is calling on people to read this?
I think there's two key things. One is the day-to-day, what's happening day-to-day, people can identify it with that, because we're all doing similar things. And what I try to do there is bring some humor into these everyday things that we have to do. So I think humor is important to put that in, and people have enjoyed that. So I always try to put this element of humor in. But in general, when you've got a narrowed world, all the people are going to coincide more and connect more than they normally would. Because normally we're all going out all our different ways every day and doing many different things. But now we're doing the same things, and we're thinking the same thing. So one thing is actions, what you're doing. Mm. And the other thing is, what are you thinking? And so you find that people, not just in Colombia, everywhere, all around the world, are now coinciding with the same kind of thoughts. And what I've tried to do is kind of try to identify early some of these thoughts, and people connect with them. And that's what's been motivating, because people have come back and said, oh yeah, I was thinking that. I thought that. So it's trying to express those in perhaps in a different way, in a funny way. That's what I'm trying to do.
Excellent. And tell us about the selection we're going to hear.
Well, I think the first one has to be there. As I said a few minutes before, it was a kind of innocent age now. So I was just putting pen onto paper for the first time and addressing this virus and this quarantine that was at the time was only going to be for 4 days. Mm. And then it turned out to be a lot longer, and could be even longer still. So I think it's important to have that. And this is a key thing of the diary, that you could write something in 6 months or a year's time about, oh, my experience with coronavirus. But here I'm putting it down every day. So there's no going back and tinkering with it and saying, oh, I wish I hadn't said that. Or why did I think that? You're just putting yourself out there, and it's gone. So that day is there. So whatever I said or thought on day one is out there, and I have to live with it later. So you have to be honest with yourself each day. So I think day one is really important to see how I was then. Mm. And there's some general points in day one, which I might come back to, the whole thing that the world is upside down in different ways, or back to front, or and I think that's what there are new ways or new things every day that are totally upside down. Mm. And I've put a lot of them in the first one, but I think I'll come back to that theme, because it presents itself almost every day.
I like number one, because as you say, the innocence, it was a more innocent time. Amazing that we're recording this on the 13th, not the 13th, the 13th day on April Fool's Day. So let's say, you know, 13 days on, we've lost an innocence. It's just, it beggars belief.
Yeah, I mean, the other ironic thing is we've gone nowhere physically, but we've moved on so much mentally, emotionally. So you've got this strange contrast of the one being totally static physically,
yeah,
but moving on so much. So that I might touch on that in over the next few days, because I think it's important. I chose because I mean, the humor has been important. Number three, I was talking about exercise and doing exercise and basically making fun of myself. And people love that. I mean, it was true. I mean, I was and still am not a very good dancer or whatever. So I was just telling the truth on the page, but trying to make it humorous, and people really, really love that.
It's the British self-deprecating humor that comes very much across in that one. And is it the Zumba Klaus?
Yeah, and it's. I would recommend it. I'm not getting any commission from Gabriel, but he's a very good teacher. We love him. We're in front of him every day.
Okay.
And I am definitely improving. You know, I have to say that humbly. Okay.
Perfect. The next one you've had some feedback for.
Yeah, well, I get feedback on all of them, but that this specific one, people were maybe a bit worried. They said, oh, this is very grim. you know, are you all right? We accept that, you know, you're talking about this, but maybe you should just, where are the jokes, you know? So I wasn't quite sure on whether I think I'll come back to these themes, but I have to be careful not to make it too heavy. That was kind of the message.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's why I wanted to include it in this selection.
Mm.
So that people could get maybe a contrast of tones. Maybe your own mood. I mean, my mood will change over these days. So one day I'm sitting down and I'm, you know, something's happened or whatever, and not so upbeat. But the whole thing about writing the diary is, when coming back to the therapy point, this is a very positive thing for me as a person, and to share it with other people, that's a very good experience.
Definitely. But we can't be expected to be upbeat every single day, every single minute. And, you know, when we're being, I'm not saying we're being held, but it's an obligation to our community and to everyone else to stay in a quarantine, not just to yourself. It's, you know, it's something has been obviously put out there by the World Health Organization, picked up by the local government here and the national government. I mean, you're going to go in and out of moods. I don't find that, you know, overwhelming. And people have said, as you say, they came back to episode 7 saying it's a bit dark, you're a bit raw, you know. I didn't find it dark. I might mention that I'm a very dark person, so I didn't find it dark. I just found it instantly relatable. So, you know, everyone's going to react differently to these things. And so tell us about episode 10, entry 10.
Yeah, 10, I mean, it's a round number. And I came across the idea of, well, this is a kind of milestone, an anniversary. So it was quite fun playing around the idea of, well, what's a 10th anniversary in wedding? Your wedding anniversaries turned out to be tin or aluminium. And you probably know, in colloquial English, you can say I'm on the tin, is basically having a few beers. So I thought it'd be appropriate to say, oh, well, this is tin anniversary for 10 days. So we'll have a few tins to celebrate. And then looking forward, I thought, well, what's coming up then? 15 is whatever it is. 20 happens to be China.
Huh.
So, and China kind of kept coming back into the...
Okay, so we'll, you know, I like this introduction we've given. We're going to listen to these entries, entry 1, entry 3, 7, and 10, and then come back and have a little reflection about them, because I think this is great, because we definitely can relate, and we all go through different experiences, but there's something obviously very there's something that unites us, not just being in quarantine, but seeing the words on the page. Perhaps if you're not the most expressive person, you know, Peter's words can, you know, appeal to you in this and say, well, that's how I was feeling. Actually, he's really got it. Or that's not how I was feeling. That's not what I want to express. Maybe it will help us a little bit. So let's take a listen. Let's have a listen of Peter's 4 entries for this one, and we'll be right back to reflect a little bit more on this. Okay.
Ovi Diary, Day 1. You wake in the early, still dark hours and look for signs of life, your own life first. Yes, you're still thinking, you're still breathing, a bothersome headache lurking at the back of your head, the one that woke you up in the first place. You listen next for your loved one or your loved ones. Yes, she's there, sobbing, but still there. You reach out a hand to comfort. Crying is better than dying. You lie there still for some time, waiting for the light and the birdsong, waiting for your headache to stop. There is a dryness in your throat. Is that one of the symptoms? We too have survived the night, but what of the city? You listen hard for signs of life outside. Nothing. No distant humming traffic. No barking dogs, no stubborn dregs of after parties. Is still alive, this Bogota? You have to believe that it is. 8 million quiet, frightened souls, probably listening to the same silence. It's finally broken by the far, nearer, nearer, far siren of an ambulance, blaring unnecessarily on the empty streets. You make mental plans for the day, starting with empty bladder. That could be one of the highlights, if you're only taking the piss, of your day. The world is upside down. The typical cold English behaviour of no physical contact, no kissing, hugging or shaking hands in greeting, was considered in most places to be antisocial. Now it's a must. The world is inside out. Old people, for their own sanity, were encouraged to look for any opportunity for social intercourse. My mother, aged 93, has carefully built up a network of friends and acquaintances, constantly renewed because they keep dying on her, and a busy agenda of activities. Now she has to renounce this support system and is left like a toddler next to a freshly collapsed tower of bricks that she can't put back together again. The world is the wrong way round. Everything is up in the air except the planes we used to take us to and from our loved ones. Our plans are as useful as these planes. The world is head over heels. Loneliness used to be viewed as the 21st century killer. Now it's the non-stop 24/7 presence of partners and children. Families have got used to being distant, digital, and dysfunctional. Now proximity threatens these new dynamics, like a cat set amongst the pigeons. Except that the pigeons can do nothing except smash their heads against the nearest window pane. If the internet crashes, we're all doomed. The world is back to front. Here in Colombia, the lawless, most remote regions of the country, where guerrilla groups still operate, and where there are no doctors, nurses, clinics, or hospitals, and where there never have been any, are probably the safest place to be. You can only hope that no one goes to help them. Bogota, March the 20th, 2020. Day 3. You wake up late, it's 5 o'clock. Are you maybe getting used to the new regime? You listen hard for birdsong, for the morning chorus, but instead of a chorus, it's a solo, a solitary bird, repeating the same plaintive notes. Are birds self-isolating too? You need to check it out again tomorrow. In times of trauma, you turn naturally to the familiar for comfort. So we wait for Desert Island Discs on the Radio 4. It's been going for more than 70 years, so you can't get more familiar than this. The signature music, the friendly chat, the heartwarming story of triumph out of adversity, all this is very comforting. The only problem is the basic concept of this much-loved program, being isolated for the rest of your life without even YouTube or WhatsApp for company. The program ends and the real day three begins with a hug, the tightest, longest hug we can do without choking. If you have someone to hug, hug them, because humanity, other humans, is all we have. And if you don't have someone to hug, hold on to the memory of a hug or the promise of one. In times of international catastrophe, we all have to make sacrifices. Today, yours is Sumba. Constanza finds it on YouTube and puts it on the TV screen. Sumba para principiantes, Sumba for beginners. Gabriel, the young, handsome, dynamic instructor, flanked by his young, enthusiastic, legged acolytes, starts the routine with some simple steps, which you think you are following more or less. But when he starts to move his arms at the same time, you are engulfed by panic. This is multitasking. You can't do this. This is what your wife and young people do. You are reminded instantly and unhappily of weddings and other celebrations where you have been invited onto the dance floor, only to be shuffled off in shame minutes later. You remember Constanza's friends trying and failing to teach you some basic steps. Didn't they know that at least where dancing is concerned, you were irremediably and irrevocably English? But in the end, this YouTube Zumba was a success. No one was watching. It was a good workout. And you discovered the fanciful but positive ploy of imagining for a moment that the screen was a mirror and that Gabrielle's stylish, athletic, and perfectly harmonious movements were all yours. We earned our brunch. Lashings of eggs scrambled with onions and tomatoes. Yesterday, you had been wondering why the Colombians were stockpiling on eggs rather than toilet rolls. Today, your niece told you the answer in an email. Eggs are a binder, therefore less need for wipers. I think she might be right. And for some reason, that thought reminds you of the Colombian government's policy on coronavirus, graphically presented to us this evening. If we all self-isolate, wash our hands, and thus protect the over 70s, the growth curve will soon bottom out rather than peak. Let's hope that they are right too. Day 7. You sit at your desk as the bright early morning sun floods in, and you look out at the city's brick houses and buildings, illuminated against the green of the Andes Mountains, huge, unmoving, unmoved by what is happening in the Bogota savannah. By late morning, a wind gets up and shakes some yellow flowers from the chicala tree in front of our house. You are reminded that just a few days before this all started, we had an apocalyptic thunderstorm with hailstones the size of golf balls bouncing off windows and cars. Within half an hour, Bogota was as white as a Christmas card. When it was safe to walk out again, hours later, you had to trudge through mounds of mostly green leaves on the pavement. That's what the coronavirus is going to do, you thought. It's going to shake and bully us until we fall before our time. How do we stop it? Last night, you saw the president on TV, insisting that we all work together. You find it hard to concentrate because he has changed his dress strategy, the usual sober suit replaced by a kind of baseball jacket, still with a tie, his name on one side, the badge of Colombia on the other. It looks disturbingly like the kind of thing that Trump would wear. The idea, no doubt, is to inspire the idea of Duque as leader, but man of the people. You hope he doesn't start to wear battle fatigues. We are constantly reminded that this is a kind of war, because when you're in a war, you know where you are. There's us and there's the enemy. We know all about wars in Colombia, the war on drugs, the war on terrorism, and the ongoing phony war against the Castro Chavistas of Venezuela and beyond. But who is the enemy here? Is it the antisocial workers who are still using public transport? Is it the old people who queue in tired threads around the banks trying to claim their tiny pensions? They're only in line because they're not online. Is it the carefree young people who think that they can't die? Or is it the enemy within? The opponent within us who refuses to believe or accept what is happening, or the weak part of us who cannot cope and who cannot follow our duty as citizens? Or is it the virus itself? This virus is stealthy, invisible, overwhelming and underhand. It doesn't play by the rules. It seems that our only defense, because there seems to be no form of attack, is cleanliness. On TV, we are shown 3-minute videos on how to wash our hands. If we already had a feeling of impotence, this makes it worse. Next, they'll be telling us how to wipe our bottoms. You are reminded of famous advertising campaigns from the 50s. After the Second World War, with the Axis powers defeated, the West needed a new enemy. So the adverts for cleaning products urged housewives to take on and defeat the invisible enemy. Germans were replaced with germs. In our house, Constanza is on the front line against this new virus, more potent and menacing than those germs from the past. Armed only with a brush, a mop, and Fabuloso, she has been trying to keep the enemy at bay. Our house is spotless, but is it safe? And while Constanza cleans the floors, you wash the dishes and you scrub out your soul, scraping out the words you write each day. We each have our therapy to cope with the demons that destiny has dealt us. Bogota, March 26, 2020. Day 10. You are woken twice during the night, first by cramp in one foot and then by the repeated voice of a woman downstairs. Now, the only woman currently living in your house is sleeping soundly by your side, so for a moment you are worried. Who is it? What is she saying? From your half sleep, you make out that familiar Chinese voice. Bluetooth disconnected. Bluetooth disconnected. It's the voice of the portable speaker. You go downstairs to disconnect it and her. Neither of these interruptions are virus symptoms, but they are causes of a broken night's sleep, so the day starts badly. And it gets worse when you try and tune into your usual Radio 4 programs, which have now been disrupted by the clocks being brought forward to summertime in the UK. So it's day 10, double figures already. You think it would be a good idea to celebrate or at least commemorate these special days as if they were wedding anniversaries. You Google 10th anniversary, tin or aluminium. In colloquial English, tin is beer, so that works. Beer also has the same properties as tin and aluminium. Both materials represent the durability and flexibility needed to sustain a loving union. You drink to that. And if you want to start planning, 15th is crystal and 20th is China. It would be ironically appropriate if the whole thing ends on that day. It's Sunday, and in an effort to normalize things, we agree to have our usual weekly brunch, French toast with various toppings. This is also a good excuse for Constanza to make another recipe video. You didn't realize just how tasty sugar and lemon can be on top of French toast. Perhaps this lockdown time is a chance to rediscover the wonderful, simple things in life. With the current constraints, you are allowed to take your dog out for a 10-20 minute walk. Since we haven't got a dog, you decide to take the car out. It's been idle for 10 days and Constanza says it needs to be warmed up. 10 car days is apparently equivalent to one dog day. You plan to drive to the big supermarket, but after 1 minute you feel guilty for taking the unnecessary journey and turn back home, the engine still cold. You walk instead to another supermarket, where there is a short, staggered queue to get in. You pay more attention to other people than you normally would. You notice the novice male shoppers calling home for instructions. Can you tell me where the floor cleaner is? I did what you said, but it's not there. You take the opportunity to see if the various Corona brands are dying or thriving. Corona chocolate, on offer. Corona beer, large display, largely untouched. And Corona China, ideal for that 20th anniversary. You buy Corona chocolate, even though you don't like it, as a kind of good luck charm. Your main mission is to buy alcohol, of the cleansing, not the stimulating kind, but there is none left in the supermarket or several chemist shops. There's been a run on it. Perhaps we'll have to go through the tearful process of extracting it from our much-loved wines and spirits. Please let that day not come. For the moment, let's celebrate our 10th anniversary with a tin or two in front of the telly. It might mean that I have to get up in the night to empty my bladder, but that's okay. The only problem is that you've just noticed the brand of our toilets, Corona. Bogota, March 29th, 2020.
So what did you think of those four entries that Peter Dale, kindly recorded for us to you know, let us hear it in the spoken voice and more so in his voice? And before we reflect totally on those four entries, let's talk quickly about entry number 12, because, you know, as anyone will notice as they read it, you've been more creative and you've put, I don't know if the little girl is a fictional character or you're basing it on neighbors or you're basing it on someone else. But I saw my son, my four turning five, he'll be five in quarantine this week, or maybe next week. I must get that right. But I saw my son in it. You know, let's move away from the medical and, you know, fatality, tragedy, which is very hard to do so when we're 24-hour news. But, you know, as I say, I'm looking at four big apartment blocks out of my study window, and I can see kids or children pressed to windows or, obliged to draw, but being on their balconies outside. It's hard. These kids, they understand that there's something going on, but of course they're not going to truly, comprehend the gravity of the situation. So tell us a little bit about this entry number 12.
Yeah, I have friends, obviously, with kids. I've got grown-up kids, but with small kids, and I was thinking about the situation, and I came across this image. I used an image of a hothouse or incubator, and I think that's happening not just with kids, but with everyone. Everything is, you know, people are stuck in these small spaces. Tempers are raised, and things happen differently. So I think little kids could grow up faster in that kind of space. Obviously, there's going to be family problems, and there will be already, of people living one on top of each other. So, but I think that, you know, thinking of the future, the impact on the kids, hopefully they won't get it. I mean, they're hopefully the ones that are not going to be they're not going to be dying of this virus, but they're going to be influenced by it in many ways. We talk about world wars and things, but this is different in that you're in prison. You know, we're all in prison for this period. With other conflicts, you go out and have some kind of life. You go to school, but here you don't. No. So I thought I'd experiment in number 12, but I may come back to the idea in other episodes, other entries of, you know, fictionalized lives outside my own.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And I just think of my son. He will remember this. He's four turning five. He'll remember this. My little boy, who was born in early January, he won't, but he'll forever be referred to as, a child born during, 2020, the year of the coronavirus. I mean, it will be an identifying trait, not obviously his identity, but just as people are referred to as being, baby boomers and so on else. So do we have a different thing? We've got right now millennials. What will the next one be? Will it be, coronas? I don't know what they are. But I mean, you're putting your heart on the page, especially when you get creative with Antonia. And I just thought we could reflect on this time. We're both in Bogota, but of course we're remotely because we can't meet up. And I've seen people writing about empty city and so on, but the city is not in the slightest bit empty. It's the common spaces which are empty, the roads and the markets, although if you go to a bank, you're going to rub shoulders with people, but it's the city's full. But we're all in containment. We're all in this situation, and that's your incubator. That's what you're talking about in this. And so, I mean, how do you feel that this is going to develop over, next month, month and a half, 2 months? Because I know, I'm pretty sure my son's not going back to school until June. I'm pretty sure of it. And the very thought of it is, well, my positivity is tempered by my negativity. My positivity is that me and my son, my older son, are becoming very close, which is, you know, a wonderful thing. But at the second time, it's like, oh my God, homework every single day, you know, routines, children's tantrums, and so on. So how do you, Peter, you know, feel about this? And well, I'd like to know what, you know, your wife Constanza feels as well. I mean,
it's going to be stressful for everyone. Mm. Whether people by themselves, I mean, that's obviously a different kind of stress, that they're living totally by themselves. So I think if we have one or two or three people that we're living with, we have an advantage. At the same time, it's a challenge. Mm. But I think the advantages are greater. So you've got this direct human company, which is a great thing to have. Constanza's a more social person, so she probably suffers more than I do. So that's probably more on a personal level, more of a challenge for her. But now she's, as I mentioned in one of the diaries, she's now doing videos, or we're doing them together. She's doing cooking. So cooking classes online, sending them out, and there's been a great reaction to that. So that's a kind of practical, positive thing to do in your own home to cook.
Definitely.
So she's found that kind of outlet and a way to connect to people, which is really positive. Everyone's going to be, yeah, it's a kind of total experiment for everyone. I mean, no one's been through this kind of experience before. So there's going to be some strange consequences, and we can't predict all the consequences.
Mm. So you've had some amazing news. You've had some amazing news, and I suppose it was shared across the garden fence. Right? One of your neighbors is a producer, and he has got hold of the COVID diary by Peter Dale, and he says, listen, we're going to do something with this. Tell us about that. That's because this is huge.
Yeah, this is very exciting. So this is a guy, Miguel Vila, who's a producer, and he's seen the potential for an experimental audiovisual platform in Instagram. Mm. So the day that we're talking now, April the 1st, the first episode is going to go out under the name of Quarantine Chronicles. As you mentioned earlier, Kobe Diary, which on the first day seemed to be a very smart name, has now become a generic term. So everyone's doing COVID diaries all over the world. So just to stand out a bit, we're going to use the name Quarantine Chronicles. So this is going to be on something called Instagram TV. So anyone who's on Instagram will be able to see this profile, and they'll be able to see something that's has audio, has visual, has a soundtrack. I'm going to see it for the first time today, so I can't say exactly what it's going to look like, but I'm very excited about it. And over the days, the different entries will be dramatized in this way. So this content is going to reach, hopefully, a much bigger audience.
Amazing. So you're going to put my microphone, mixer, and laptop to shame with a professionally produced Instagram TV Quarantine Chronicles. This could launch yourself and the Bogota writers into a whole nother hemisphere in terms of creativity. I'm quite excited, and please be sure to share the links with us so that we can, you know, put it up on the Facebook page. I will be putting up the sort of, I guess it's the subscription form for your diary on the Facebook page, the Columbia Calling Facebook page, for those people interested in following Peter's diary. I highly recommend it because it's just a way of maybe, you know, verbalizing some of the frustrations, some of the humor, some of the challenges that we're all facing at this moment. I mean, it's pretty great. And so let me just say thank you to Peter for your time. And I would like to hear from the listeners out there. I'd like you to put your comments onto Peter's diary or put your comments onto the Facebook page. What do you think about, you know, what Peter's doing and so on and so forth? Peter, I wish you all the best during this, you and Constanza, and of course your loved ones, all the best during this quarantine period. And I know that this is going to inspire you for further work. This is definitely, I mean, we're going to have a full, I think, spiel of creative output during this period of quarantine, because painters are going to paint, writers are going to write, musicians are going to compose. I think we're going to see culture totally dominated by this period. But you have already, you're at the vanguard of this. So thank you.
Well, thanks a lot again for the opportunity to talk about it, and I hope that the people listening are going to enjoy the diaries. And yeah, please sign up if you want to keep listening to them or keep reading them, whatever medium you prefer.
Thank you again. We've been speaking to Peter Dale, the original Bogota writer. You can see Bogota Writers on Facebook. They've got a website as well. I'll put them all up on the Facebook page and Twitter and so on. Their book, Voices of Bogota, is an engaging collection of stories written by individual voices and writers about the city. I do highly recommend Peter's diary, The Quarantine Chronicles, on Instagram TV, although I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's going to be amazing. And of course, sign up for his diary. I just think it's a creative way of maintaining a certain degree of sanity. And of course, it must be a type of catharsis, putting it down on paper and, you know, expressing how you feel. Of course, everyone out there, please stay safe. Please stay well. The figures, numbers of fatalities in the United States coming out is absolutely shocking. Of course, we know about Spain and Italy and the UK. In Colombia, we seem to be still on the upwards curve right now. This is April the 1st, 13th day. This is obviously a life-changing, world-changing event, and I urge you all to stay safe. Do whatever the World Health Organization insists and obliges us to do. Do not think that you are immune. Do not think that this is just a disease or a virus that's now impacting the middle and the upper classes, as so much has been written about. This is now spreading like wildfire between all the different social classes and strata and so on. On that note, again, thank you to Peter Dale. This has been episode 319 of the Columbia Calling podcast. We'll be back next week with more Columbia-related content. And as I can't say it enough, stay safe, stay well, follow the indications, follow the recommendations, and thank you again for listening. Bye-bye for now.